10 minutes, Madam Chair. Don't you breathe a word either.
I will open this meeting of the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services and thank the committee members for showing up, because when I was here 8 minutes ago, no one else was at this dais, which then allowed me time to rush down to the other committee meeting and make sure that our bill, House Bill 3059, is proceeding rapidly out of Ways and Means where it shouldn't have been in the first place. So, having accomplished that,
we're
and
glad
with,
you were doing the right thing.
I was doing our work here. So with that, and my apologies to the audience for the delay, we are at this point in session where sessions seem to last a little longer, and some of us find need to get something to eat in between a long morning session and a long afternoon. We have excused Representative Matthews and Freeman today because they are attending the law enforcement memorial service that's taking place at the same time, but unfortunately nobody told us that in time that we could readjust this committee, so we'll do this work and they'll do that work, and thank you all for being here. My intention today in holding this informational hearing was to allow an opportunity for folks to talk a little bit and share with the legislative body the preparatory work that's taking place to prepare our military personnel for their upcoming deployment and to talk about what work is being done for preparing for the return of our soldiers and ways that we can be helpful. I think it's just sort of important to remind the public of some of the behind-the-scenes work that does go on to support and make those times away as smooth as possible and the return even smoother. At least that is our hope. So with that, we have a number of folks who are with us today. If the group would like to come up together, General Caldwell, Sergeant Major Barry Vertner, Master Sergeant Hitchwood, and Michelle Kaczewski, or in what order, or whatever you would like to do, the show is yours.
Thank you.
Maybe I misread a name here, and if I mispronounce somebody's name because I can't read, please correct yourself when you identify yourself for the record. Correct me when you identify yourselves.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department, and as you've already announced, but with me today is Sergeant Major Retired Vertner, who runs our reintegration program, Master Sergeant Hightower, who also is with the reintegration program, and Michelle Kaczewski, who is also our family program manager for the Oregon National Guard. Based on your agenda, I wanted to start off, and you'll be getting some packets and some handouts. And if I'm smart enough to do this, we'll see. But I'm going to try to show you a PowerPoint presentation.
Thank you.
You notice that I said try. I know there's a little button.
There
down
seem to
here.
Be some technical skills that many of us at an area, many of us of a, what, I don't know, an age group are lacking.
I need a 16-year-old kid here, right?
Exactly.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, but it has nothing to do with age group.
3 or 4 year old.
That is correct. It does not have anything to do with an age group because Representative Riley is the one who usually takes care of it in many of our other committees.
Oh, I still have a dial phone in my house, so no.
And you're smart to do
that's
so.
That's right. I don't trust those
out.
Buttons, but okay. The handouts you're getting, the black folder we'll get to in a minute, but the first portion that I'd like to brief you on is the, I know you got to do this, what is it, up or down?
Just press enter.
Enter, okay. I wanted to show you a little bit about what's going on with the 41st Brigade Combat Team, who we just mobilized this last weekend, and this slide depicts where our units are from. As you can see, the yellow dots are what we call battalion headquarters, which a typical battalion in the Oregon National Guard is roughly around 550, 600 men and women. The red dots are the other towns that indicate where company-sized elements are, usually around 150, 160 soldiers, and then the blue dot is the brigade headquarters, which is located in Tigard. So as you can see, we've got several different battalion headquarters, company level units, and of course the brigade, which constitutes a total of a little over 2,600 folks that we just mobilized this weekend. When the brigade is fully fit and ready to deploy to Iraq, they of course are moving, and some of them have moved to Fort Stewart, Georgia from Oregon. The remainder of them, predominantly the 186 infantry down in Ashland in the Southern Oregon arena, they'll be moving out this weekend and getting to Fort Stewart, Georgia for additional training. The next slide depicts how we break these units up. And at the top of them, you'll see Baghdad, Al-Assad, Taji, and Talil, which are the four locations where the brigade will be in Iraq. This is a military box chart, basically, that tells you all everything has a symbol, everything has a means something to us, means very little to you. I understand that. But in essence, you have the headquarters in the 182 Brigade or 182 Battalion, which is out of Bend, is in the first one under Baghdad. And so you have the headquarters around the Portland area, the support battalion, which is in Portland as well, Tigard. Those headquarters groups will be in that unit that will be established permanently over in Baghdad. And Al-Assad, you'll have the 2nd Battalion, 218th Field Artillery, which is their home is in Forest Grove. And those are the signed units underneath them. And you'll notice that CSC, which is what the 131 CSC company, for instance, is 131 people, and there'll be a convoy security company is what they end up being. That's what they'll be doing is convoy security. The next group is in Taji, which is going to be part of the 2162, which is headquartered out of Springfield now, and they're back in the Central Valley area. Includes Corvallis, Lebanon, and McMinnville, I guess. And then Woodburn is part of the 182. And then the last group is the 186, which I said was down in Southern Oregon, and they will be in Talil. And let me show you where those places are. Now, that's a very busy map, so if you look at Iraq and just look at the big red stars, you'll kind of see where these groups are going to be, the ones I mentioned earlier. So in essence, we're going to have two of them in and around Baghdad, one in Taji, one in Baghdad at Camp Victory, where the headquarters will be, the brigade headquarters. And then we have a unit in Al-Assad, which we mentioned earlier, and then, of course, Talil, which is going to be in more toward Kuwait. So that's kind of the basic layout of where they're going to be. Their main mission is to do combat convoy security detail. They also have other missions that include force protection missions, which means they'll be guarding bases and they'll be doing those sort of things. So it's fairly, I guess it's a mission that the infantry can adapt to fairly rapidly. These folks are generally get to point A to point B on foot. That's what they're trained to do, but in this mission they'll be mounted. So they will get vehicles when they get over there. We're not taking very, very few of our, I don't think we're taking any of our rolling stock. As a matter of fact, none of the wheeled vehicles that we have assigned to this brigade are going to be deployed. Let me back up one slide if I can figure out how do I do that.
Get backspace.
Oh, backspace. Geez, what a concept. On the far right of this slide, you'll notice that there are another block in the dots. Those are companies that we're picking up, two from New Mexico National Guard, one from the South Carolina National Guard, one from the Delaware National Guard, and one from the Nebraska National Guard. Those five companies are going to come in and fill in to make up that total brigade number that we need to have. We weren't able to provide all those numbers without seriously degrading one of our other major units, which is also scheduled to deploy with the Idaho National Guard in 2011, late 2010, early 2011. So in order to make up our total numbers that we needed, we went out to the National Guard Bureau and said we need some help from some other states. And these states are the ones that offered up an infantry company, same type of company, same type of training. And then we're going to marry them into our organization. We already have The unit did a 3-week annual training period in California at Camp Roberts, which they just completed last weekend. And those companies were in California with our brigade headquarters to get climatized and get associated so we know who the players were. Their leadership has been working with our leadership for the last 6 months. So it isn't like it's, hey, who are you? So we've had a good deal of interplay with those five companies for the last 6 months, and now they will be physically with this organization as we put them all together at Fort Stewart, Georgia. The next slide shows a timeline. Again, it's fairly busy, but if you look at the big red 4 to 10 May, that's where we're at today. These are all the things that they have done prior to this deployment. There's some of the activities that they had to do to make sure that we had certain milestones that had to be accomplished. We have, some pre-deployment site survey, for instance, 4 to 14 March. We sent our leaders to Iraq. They spent that time in Iraq talking and working with the unit that they're going to replace, which is doing a similar type mission. We've had the mobilization. Now they go into what's termed post-mobilization training in the red, top right, and then they start deploying different groups. We have an advanced detachment that will be leaving sometime around the middle of June to go to Iraq and start setting up the entry of our guys coming over. And then they will deploy sometime on or around the 15th of July. We actually believe that some of them will be leaving Fort Stewart, Georgia, about the 5th or 6th of July, and that flow will continue until about the 15th or 16th, and right in that time frame, and they'll all be in Kuwait by the time that date comes around. Now, what I know you're concerned about is what happens on the back end, and as we are, during and afterwards. And you'll see on this slide, we have the deployment, and then in April, we'll have movement to next April. We'll have movement back to the demobilization site, which right now is, I think, planned for Fort Stewart, if I'm not mistaken. They usually bring them right back to where they came from. That's where their records are. That's where their connection is with the big army. And so that's where they'll be. Then we'll have sometime between April and May 10th, everybody should be back from Iraq and at Fort Stewart, Georgia. They will spend approximately 7 to 10 days at Fort Stewart, Georgia, and then they will be deployed back to Oregon. And we intend to have a rotation, as we always do, with all of our different partners, ODVA, VA, many other partners that we bring in for that last 3 days that we have them here, which is, you've heard some testimony on that. You have passed a resolution on to Congress suggesting that total of 10 to 12 days is simply not adequate to do what we need to do, and we all recognize that and we know that. However, we come back at them within the next 90 days. You'll see the demob plus 90 days, August in 2010, and that's when we go back at this process one more time, because we know that what they get in that 3-day period, 7 days at the demobilization site, 3 days with us to do the same kind of iteration of medical issues, pay issues, you name it, education, what's your plans. They're just simply not ready to grasp that information. So in August, we come back and we do it one more time. People to my left spend a good deal of time working on those, on that particular issue, because we need to get retouched with these folks. We know that about 50% of the people that are deploying from the state of Oregon on this deployment are currently unemployed. So we don't believe that they will probably have been able to secure a job while they're doing their mission in Iraq. So we suspect that when they come back, that number will be roughly the same. And so we have a significant issue that we're going to have to work with next August or next summer on how do we get these people back into the employment business here in Oregon, get them jobs, and get them productive again as quick as we can. I think that's it. That is. That concludes that portion of the briefing here today. I'll be happy to answer any questions on the deployment itself, and then we can move on to what our team does with respect to before they go, during, and at the post deployment.
Thank you. Any Representative Kump?
Thank you, Chair. Could you tell us how many What is the demographics? How many women? How many men? Single moms that are leaving their, or single dads are leaving their children with the other family, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Comp, I don't have that information. Okay. I do know, you know, this is a, I can give you generalities. This is an infantry brigade.
Okay.
So it's predominantly male. The majority of the, I would say in the high 90 percentiles, probably 95 to above, will be male. The percentage of females that do serve are going to be in the headquarters elements. Typically, they're going to be in doing their clerks, their medics, their medical field, or something of that nature. I can get that information to you, and I will. As far as how many of them are single parents, again, I don't have that off the tip of my tongue, and I didn't bring that data, but I'll get that to you. I can tell you that a lot of the people, the reason we went out and got five companies, as we worked very hard to make sure that if we had that situation where we had a single mother or a single father, that we tried to leave them on the back end in the, what we term the rear detachment here in Oregon, so they're not deploying with these folks. Now, that didn't get 100%, but it got a good deal of that taken care of. Those that did go, that chose to go, or we needed them, we couldn't find a replacement for that particular skill level, those folks are well, we have a family care plan. They have to demonstrate that they have adequate care for their children, or they can't be deployed. They simply are not allowed to. So most of those folks get wiped off this deployment really early on. They end up in the rear detachment, end up here in Oregon. I mean, they're bad soldiers, just simply for whatever circumstances they may have, you know, based on their life, that they can't get away from their family right now. So that's why we're short a good number of those folks. Five companies is quite a few folks. That's around 600 people. So we had a lot of different issues. Now, some of that's due to multiple deployments. You know, we've had multiple deployments. Some of people are still dealing with injuries and other VA things that they're trying to get taken care of. They're not scored out, i.e. you can't serve anymore because you're not physically fit. They're still working through rehab or whatever the case may be. So, again, they're still a member. They're still in the unit, but they can't deploy. So that kind of makes up that group of those 500 people that we did not deploy.
Thank you.
Representative Boone. Thank you, Madam Chair. How many, maybe percentage-wise, are redeploying for a second or third time, and how many times can they redeploy?
Madam Chairman, Representative Boone, answer your last question first. They can redeploy as many times as they're physically fit to do it, and we need them. I would say, again, I don't have that exact data, but I'm going to just guess, and maybe Barry or somebody does have it, but around 30% of these folks are at least on their second deployment. We've got some in this group that have deployed. This is their fourth deployment. Now, typically when they have gone more than two, in this instance, they've volunteered for other deployments for economic reasons. Predominantly, I think it's economic, but it could be that they just simply like the lifestyle. And we've got a few folks that do fit that category, that they like this lifestyle, they like this deployment, they like the adventure. I think that's a fairly small group. I think the rest of them are basically economically driven that have gone more than the two times.
Just to follow up, how long is a deployment?
This deployment is going to last 12 months from the time that they've gone on federal active duty till the time they return, roughly 12 months. It may go as much as 13, just by a few days, but the Secretary of Defense has put out an edict that deployments for the Guard and Reserve will only be 12 months long. One of the things that we've discovered over the last 5 or 6 years that we've been doing this, most soldiers that you talk to, they can withstand missing one birthday, one Christmas, one anniversary. When you start going 18 and 24 months, with some of these deployments earlier did, when you roll into that second birthday and that second anniversary, that second Christmas, that really gets tough. They really have difficulty with that. And it, of course, hurts you on the back end when you're trying to maintain your strength. When they're home, so we have a viable organization here in the state, they're not so willing to sign back up. One other figure that I know of, because I've been dealing with it pretty directly, there's been a fair amount of discussion on how many of these folks are stop-lost. In other words, they are deployment, or had not been for the deployment, they would be getting out in this deployment cycle. And right now we have about 400 of them. out of the 2,600. 72 of those were actually stopped lost where the alert came in February. The deployment is now in May, and their service length would have ended between February and May. Those are the most critical ones that we had that we tried to work around. The majority of them, we just simply couldn't in many cases. There were something on the order of 150 of those people, and we were able to scale back down and get those people off the deployment, but these last 72, we weren't able to do that. Many of these 400 have chosen not to reenlist, what we would term as they're gaming the system, which is fine with us, because in August, if you're a stop-loss soldier, you get an extra $500 a month. And then if you reenlist while you're in country, right now I think the bonus is $10,000. So if you game the system, you can deploy, be there for August up until next April, pick up the extra $500 a month. Your enlistment date, you should have been behind you. You reenlist, you grab another $10,000 tax-free. So there's a lot of them that are very knowingly and willingly saying, I'm not going to reenlist. I'm waiting until I deploy. You know, because it's about a $15,000-$16,000 paycheck if I hit in that cycle, and they fully intend to reenlist. We think over half of that 400 is fit in that category. So,
you said that five companies, about 600. That's about 600 individuals each. Is that correct?
Each company is about 130, 140 people each. Oh. So it'd be five times. 500, 600 people, roughly.
Okay.
A little over 600 total.
Because I think I had a higher figure in my brain of how many individuals we were deploying. Maybe we were rolling in the next one. But my question really rolls back then to how many people do we still have in the state of Oregon in the National Guard available to us in times of emergency?
Madam Chairman, right now the Oregon National Guard has a grand total of about 8,400 members. We have a little over 2,000, about 2,200, I guess, in the Air National Guard, and 6,400, I think, in the Army National Guard, so that's about 8,600, I guess, total. I'm guilty.
You're guilty. Someone's telephone is ringing.
That'll just cost you $10,000.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'll shut it off here. I lost my head here, Madam Chairman. Off.
I'm getting a note here. It says, please remind people to turn off your cell phones and other communication devices.
I would say
they
Paul
do
Evans
impact
did
the.
not listening.
Must be when it translates.
Yeah, if you're getting a call, it will definitely.
He was sending
up
me an email, Paul. It was a text message.
He's back in the
back. Well, since I can't see him, I'll blame him, right?
You're in charge.
Okay. Rather than total numbers, how many do we have left by the time you get done with all these deployments?
Madam Chairman, I think safely we're going to have over 6,000 people available to the state, individuals. As I said earlier, the rear detachments are fairly robust based on these five companies that we had to pick up. So we've got a good number of people where you saw on the map the towns, all the equipment's there. We've got the full contingency of the Air National Guard. They're basically not deployed, 2,200. And probably the other aspect that I didn't mention is we've got about 150 other people, 180 right in there, that are already in Iraq in one form or another. All of our helicopters from here in Salem are deployed to Iraq. Might mention that out of the roughly 50%, over 50% of that unit had deployed once, and out of that 50%, 30% were on their third or fourth deployment. So they have deployed a lot, the aviation units have. So we've got roughly 180 people there now, plus this 2,600. So we're going to have just under 3,000 people out of the 8,600 in Iraq. So we're going to have 5,000 to 6,000, 5,500 folks available.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, or shall we move on with our panel here?
Okay. Next, I'd like to, Sergeant Major Vertner to tell you what he does with respect to the reintegration team.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm Barry Vertner. I'm the reintegration manager. We have, in the state, we have what we call RAMs, reintegration managers. We have five of those throughout the state. located. We have two in Portland area, one in the Northeast area, one in the Eugene Springfield, which covers Medford and the coast, southern coast. And then we have one in the Salem Bend area that covers. So we have those people for the reintegration side. And we have a CTAP side, which is Career Transition Assistance Program. We have two people that help families and soldier veterans find jobs, help them with resumes, helps whether it's families or the soldiers or veterans themselves. So we have those two.
Oh, excuse me, sir. Could we get you to pull your microphone just a little bit closer? And I'm going to use this break to apologize. I need to step out briefly. I'm delegating Representative Boone to just keep control if that's necessary. I'll be right back.
Okay. So we have two CTAP that help. I also work in conjunction with the Yellow Ribbon program that Congress passed back last year. So we kind of do that, which Yellow Ribbon, it requires that every unit does certain deployment, redeployment criteria that Congress said that will happen. So what it did is put an umbrella. It says a family, ESGR, and all reintegration events fall under one area now. So that's really, and then they put money to it. So there is some money available for that. What I did bring today is I brought a reintegration area manager to my left, Sergeant Highwood. That's Sergeant Highwood.
Good afternoon.
I want him to explain what he does because he's out there. He's our seasoned. He deployed with 2162 in 2005, 2004, and so I'd like him to explain what he does.
Good afternoon. I'm Master Sergeant Highwood. Not Hightower, but that's okay.
I was going to make you a general because you have way more stripes than he does.
That's right. It's all good. I'll smoke myself later, sir. Okay, so I work Southern Oregon from Albany to Ashland and Cave Falls to the coast. I have a vehicle that I drive around, and quite frankly, if we don't have road warriors out there, then a lot of our veterans, which is what we look for, do not know about our program and don't get the help that we offer. Now, we work in conjunction. If you pull out your little pamphlets that we gave you, our partners on the right-hand side, we work in conjunction with all of those partners. And we're basically a broker for them. We take the veterans, World War II, Vietnam, and there's still a few World War II veterans floating around that are alive, and Vietnam veterans and all of our Iraqi veterans, OIF and OEF, and we send them to our partners, our subject matter experts, if you will. And so we just broker for all of them and assist the veterans. But if we're not out there on the roads doing what we do, then they don't get around. And as you well know, there's a transportation problem for our veterans in the state of Oregon. And, of course, the Veterans Committee has addressed that, and we're taking into that and fixing it, hopefully in the next couple of years that will be fixed. So
we tried to do our best. We have a couple of pieces to Congress urging them to fund transportation.
Oh, sure. And with my vehicle, I'll pass transportation on to any veteran out there that needs it. We've even worked as far as Washington. We go down to California and Idaho. We've assisted soldiers, veterans, to get to Roseburg VA. Because Roseburg VA is the only PTSD clinic south of the Mississippi. So, quite frankly, we get pretty busy in Oregon, and Roseburg themselves are pretty busy.
West of the
Mississippi, yeah. Roddy.
Yeah, he's not a navigator.
I was going to say.
I don't have a Garmin.
Actually, in the packet you'll find one of these little refrigerator magnets.
Mm-hmm. This is great.
And one of the things that we recognized actually several years ago when we first started the reintegration program was that, one, we didn't know who the players were that needed to help us, our partners, that we've now detailed in the handout, so we've got that very well identified. We don't fix people. We find people that do and make that connection and find where those resources are and get that soldier, that veteran, connected with that resource. We also hand these out to every family member and give it to every soldier, tell them to put it on their refrigerator. So if they have a problem, whatever that, in that 1-800 number at the top, is our number at the Oregon National Guard, and then that individual can call with whatever issue they may have, and whoever is assigned that particular duty watch, and it rotates around between the RAMs and the headquarters, then they will help that soldier get to one of these issues, whether it be medical, PTSD, could be anything. And I'm sure that Barry could tell you chapter and verse of some of the interesting phone calls that have occurred over the last several years. The other thing is the VA hospitals. They're listed on there as well. So if they don't want to call us, they can at least have that information available to them.
And what about the older and other vets not just coming back? How do they get these? Are these available at veteran service offices?
Madam Chair, whenever we have one of our events or we get the opportunity to work with the VA or any of the other partners, we always take these with us. They're always handed out. We have them by the gross. And we found that we had to enlarge them. We originally started out with just a couple numbers on there, and as we've discovered new partners and discovered other important players, we just made the thing bigger. And so, go ahead, Barry.
And also, when the RAMs go out, they also visit all the VSOs and any of the service agencies, and they hand them out. So when they're talking to other veterans, wherever it may be, they push that out. When we do our career and benefit fairs, which is a job fair on steroids, we do all that, and we invite everybody. And by Congress, with the Yellow Ribbon Program, we are the state of Oregon, the National Guard, is supposed to take care of every service. So we try to get out. We go to, this last week, we did the Navy Reserve. We helped do a program for them.
Which I might add we were doing before we were directed to by Congress.
But
since we're now taking their money, thank God, that they're providing some funds, and we're more than willing to continue to do it. Why don't you tell them a little bit about the number of employers we have?
We have, in the database for the CTAP side, we have 185 employers that have partnership with us that one of J.D. Bauckham, who sits behind, when they have job announcements, he takes that and emails that to all the units out in the state of openings that these employers have.
Oh, that's great.
And we also have that posted on our website. So on this little thing here just below the 800 number is a website, so that's also available on that
website.
Some
of us are going to be going out tomorrow back to our districts if we can get out of here in time. And we have activities. I know I'm going up to Camp Rylea at 5.
Right.
And I know there are activities around the state, so people might be going. So is there any way we could – are they going to be – are these things going to be available?
We picked 100 of them in each tub.
And Camp Rylea received theirs this morning.
Okay,
we had a soldier drive it out to Camp Rylea this morning.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's great. That is a cool thing. I have a lot of these on my refrigerator.
I'd like Michelle to tell you what she does, and probably one of the most important, if not the most important thing we do in deployments is our family program portion. So go ahead and tell them what you do, Michelle.
Thank you.
Your name for the record, too.
Michelle Kachowski, State Family Program Director of the Oregon National Guard. Representative Boone, committee. The families, of course, are one of the hot topics, and actually the last time I was here, I do believe it was your son that was here from the Air Force Security Forces, so we definitely, you all understand the importance of family and how we all feel as family members. So one of the big things that we do in the State Family Programs Office is care for the families, everything from education and benefits, making sure they understand what's going on and giving them resources. The main way we use that is the family readiness groups. It's one of the older Army models, but it's probably still the most effective, and it's essentially a family volunteer from each unit then cares for the families of that unit. So they make the telephone calls, they do a telephone tree. Same thing that you would see if you've ever watched the TV series Army Wives, same thing. They have the welcoming kits, they welcome people, they care for the families. It's grown a lot in the past several years, of course. We, instead of just talk about annual benefits and annual training, we do a lot for medical benefits and dental benefits. One of the biggest things our families struggle with is they're not just having the service member go overseas, they're changing medical plans, they're changing pay schedules, their kids may be having different daycare problems going on, they have a financial shortage for some reason. So we make the deployment as positive an experience as it can be. And that is what I tell people. You know, we always get the, oh, I'm so sorry, your soldier is gone. And some of us think, he's doing what he wants to do. I'm happy to be a military spouse, and I enjoy it. So we try to make sure that they all understand it's a positive experience and it can be good for them. So just a couple of things that are in your packet of information we brought with you. The 41st Brigade Combat Team has a virtual family readiness group website. It is a secure website, so the nice part about this is we know that we can put information out there. The families can have information. The command can share things such as leave dates and information so that we know that they're permitted to be on there. And we have it broken out. If you go back to page 4, you will see that, as General Caldwell had in his briefing, there are 4 task force on this mission, as well as the headquarters element, and then all of the gaining units as well. So we have information by locations for those families, by the command, but then we're also working around the state. One of the most difficult things, if you look back to your slides from General Caldwell, is our families and soldiers are scattered all across the state. They don't live in one central area. They all don't belong to the same unit. People that live in Portland can belong up to about 8 or 10 different units. So we're doing a lot of regional items. We are really working on making sure it's regional-based. We do have with us, under part of the Joint Family Support Assistance Program, part of the Yellow Ribbon Program, is we actually do have now 2 licensed counselors on our staff, one who specializes in child and youth. So they have standing meetings around the state. They currently have 7 locations, and we're working up to 12, and I've requested an additional staff member through the Office of Secretary of Defense to help Southern Oregon, because we really struggle for resources there at times. We also have Operation Military Kids, American Red Cross, volunteers, staff members there. But our biggest contingent, we have over 20 full-time staff members, but it's really our volunteers. I have close to 200 volunteers that serve in our family readiness groups, and they're the key to us reaching the families. They know the families, they know the unit, and most oftentimes they're the spouse or the mother or father, husband of our family members in that unit. So they're the big people we rely on. And I just, it's incredible because they are all volunteers. They do it for the love of being a military family member, so they're the key. We have directions to getting on the virtual family readiness group, and I wanted to make an offer. It's a secure website, so we can have anybody in here that would like to register for it and see the information. Whenever the soldiers actually get overseas, we'll also be sharing pictures from them during the deployment and talking about activities. So if anyone would like to join, I'll be happy to work with you and make sure you can get on the website so you can see it. The other big part that we do during deployment is simply outreach. For a lot of these families, even though they've been, perhaps this is their first, perhaps this is their third, it's a different life while your service member is gone. It's just different. There's no other way to make it that way. So we do monthly support group calls. We do outreaches, emails. Our biggest thing is our telephone tree. Each unit has a telephone tree that they activate to check on the families once a month, and then we have family assistance centers who make phone calls every month as well to ensure the family's getting at least one phone call a month from somebody. And then working any cases they have, if they need financial resources, if they're having child care issues, child behavior is one of the big things we try to help parents with, that, yep, that's a normal reaction, that's the emotional cycle of deployment. And actually in the kit that your communities are receiving, there's a whole poster on the child care piece that talks about the emotional cycle of deployment and how kids typically react, because it's one of the biggest things we try to educate families on. And we stay busy throughout the entire deployment. We started our family briefings back in December with our town hall meetings. We have finished the family primo briefings this spring. This fall, General Wayarty, the Rear Detachment Commander, and us will be doing a 6-hour training around the state to educate the families about mid-tour leave, what it's like when your soldier comes home for 2 weeks, how that's a tough adjustment for the soldier and for the family, how to handle it, good things. Don't plan the big trip to Disney World because crowds and sleep is usually high on their priority list. We try to remind families of that. And then we will be doing we'll have them completed no later than March, since the unit's scheduled to come back in May. We will begin the education training for the families, and that's where we really get busy, trying to educate families of what their soldier is going to be like when they come back, making sure we bring in the VA, the vet centers, the reintegration team, give them tools that they're prepared to welcome home their soldier when they come back. And we do that for all of the units, not just the 41st Brigade. We've done it for the aviation unit, for the Air Guard. We do that for the whole state. I think that's it. I could go on for hours. I love my job, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you guys have about all the wonderful things we do in family programs.
Thank you. I apologize for having to step out.
Well, David knew me as a family program coordinator, so maybe he can throw in a good word. So.
This is sort of the time of all sorts of interesting little fires going on. So if you have covered this, I apologize. But if not, maybe we could take a moment to talk about what communities can do to help support the military families. I'm putting myself in the position of a parent during the time that my son was deployed, but it was in the Air Force off of Holloman Air Force Base, where half the guys were deployed at that particular time, and so there was that built-in support system on the base, and we also had the benefit of a regular email contact, or at least from up here I did, with his spouse. In our communities where there's not a base and that natural support system, what can the communities do? And if you've already covered it, just say, I need to listen to somebody else.
Madam Chair, we did not, so I can cover that. We do get that question quite often, and there are so many ways that the community can help, and some of them seem seemingly simple, but as we remind families, their families, again, it's just different. So as simple as it may sound, knowing that a family is, that the husband's gone, helping with the grass, the Christmas lights, just taking general care, that old school neighborly love that people would give to families, that's one of the biggest things. The other one that we are doing is we are having steady monthly meetings around the state. We already have 7 going, and so we're going to have more of them, and those are run by the 2 licensed counselors we have on staff from the Military and Family Life Consultants. We hope to branch that out, but we obviously need community support for those. They need a location to have those meetings. Our families don't always care to come to the armory. It's sometimes not the best place for them to meet, and then some of our armories, if they're, you know, they repair tanks in the middle of the drill floor, and so trying to have a meeting around it with kids running around is not the best option. So we always are looking for community partners, members, to have them, churches, VFWs, those sorts of things, so the communities have a good place for the families to meet. And then lastly, just whenever families are in need, we refer to a lot of emergency relief agencies. We use the Salvation's Operation Homefront Relief a lot. We use the VFW and American Legion, both have them. We use the Salvation Army. I'm trying to think, help me, Phil. Oh, the own Oregon Emergency Relief Fund. Sorry, General Caldwell, that we have. So the financial need is sometimes the big one that we refer community members to. So as I tell everybody that calls and says, what can I do, I rattle off a bigger list than I probably just gave you and just say it really depends where you, the community, want to help. We obviously also will need a large number of supporters next year as we try to welcome home the largest number we've ever deployed. The homecoming can be just as difficult. We also, around Christmas time, I like to throw this one out there because it's pretty easy. A lot of our families struggle, since they're single parents at this point, with Christmas shopping with kids in tow or birthday shopping. So one of the big things some of our churches do around the state is they offer child care in the afternoon, or a VFW auxiliary will do games, or a YMCA, so that the parent who's left behind with the kids can do Christmas shopping and take a little time. And those are good monthly events if a church is already having something, to invite those families to leave the kids and have some 2 hours of sanity, as one of the women just told me the other day. That's a good, you know, you love your kids, but when you're the single parent for 24/7 and that's not how you're used to it, it's a little struggle for them. So
it seems to me that we could do some better outreach to our own citizens in our communities to maybe make note of the fact that someone they know has a deployed person in the family, and it wouldn't hurt to be available. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a church group to offer childcare.
Right.
If you know your neighbor's doing it mm-hmm. alone, an individual could offer to watch the kids for a couple of hours. I think maybe people just don't really think about the difference mm-hmm. for people who are part of a regular community and don't have the support system of a military base.
Mm-hmm. I would just add on, Madam Chairman, that I think that's one of the bigger issues that we struggle with, and that's why the value of the family program for us is certainly huge. Many of these folks, the average age of our guardsmen right now is under 30, somewhere between 18 and 30 years old. And so there's a, I think it goes with those of us that have been around more than a day or two, as you know, that they're just so simply some of those systems that we're familiar with, they're not. They just don't have the life experience to have gained those relationships. And if they're not involved in a church or they're not involved in some other activity in the community, in some respects, and particularly if they live in a town that doesn't have an armory and their soldiers deployed someplace else, and they feel quite isolated, that they don't have the support mechanism that they could just go down to the armory and tell the NCO or the officer that's there and say, I got a problem. You know, maybe that armory is 50 miles away. In some cases, as was indicated, we have people that live across the border in Washington or Idaho or California. So that makes it even more difficult. And I think what Michelle was talking about, this constant monthly contact is so vital. Even then, we find that during that 30-day period, they've gotten themselves into hot water with a credit card, or they've gotten themselves in trouble with a cell phone bill, talking to their husband or their wife in Iraq. And they can use cell phones over there, and suddenly we found several that they had several hundred dollars worth of telephone bills that they had no means to pay, because they just simply weren't coping very well with the deployment. Unfortunately, we don't usually hear about that until it becomes a crisis, and then we have to try to mobilize the volunteers to get in and work with these folks. So I think anything communities, I think this is what maybe we're hoping to get out of the event tomorrow, is to get communities aware of the fact that we have deployed soldiers from every community in this state being sent to Iraq, and anything that any community member could think of that would be no prescription, no order. You just think of something, if it's a good idea, you know, let's work together as communities to try to get our arms around these folks. And I think that's kind of the idea that, and Paul could give you chapter and verse on it, but I know that's certainly one of the outcomes we're hoping to see, is this community awareness and the fact that they can actually reach out and make a difference with some of these folks. So, enough said. There's a couple other items in your handout. We can't get it with the magnet. We did a mouse pad.
Wow.
For you to... Originally, I thought that was probably something to wipe your nose with, but I was told no. That depends. Yeah, that's what that was. And then, of course, the yellow ribbon, campaign ribbon that you're all welcome to wear on your lapel tomorrow. That would be a very... or today. So that, pending your questions, that concludes what we brought forward to you today, and we appreciate the opportunity to display what we have been doing. I would tell you that 2004, when we realized that we were ill-prepared to really receive our soldiers back after deployment, let alone we didn't do a very good job of preparing them, I termed it, we were building the bike while we rode the bike. And we have come a great deal of distance between then and now. Our six-month summits of our reintegration team have brought in numerous partners, volunteers, that have brought good, positive things to the discussion and services that we didn't even know existed. So we're very delighted that we've matured the program to the degree that we have. It's not a perfect program. It probably never will be. But at that point in time, as Michelle indicated, she's got 20 people out there. That in 2004, we had one. So we have moved a long way. We see less and less of the horrific issues that we saw in those days. Yeah. With family members and soldiers, we're able to capture them quicker, get fixes for them quicker, get people to the right place at the right time, and get them the services that they need and deserve, and that the federal government and the state government is providing. Last thing I'll say is that Governor Kulongoski is one of my big heroes. We went to him with this problem, recognizing we had a problem, we had no money, and he said, you do whatever you've got to do, and I will support it and pay for it. If I have to move the legislature to another state, he said, I will get it fixed. So he stepped in, and he stepped up to the plate, took the swing, and we were able to build this thing off of state resources, essentially, because there weren't any federal ones. We had one person. Her predecessor was the only person we had doing this. And it was paid for by the federal government. And so we were able to, get some limited state resources and put it in our budget and be able to do it midstream when we were desperate and needed to do something quick. So we will always be grateful for him, and like I said, he'll always be my hero for that alone. He can do a lot of wrong, and he'll still be my hero.
Okay, well, yes.
I'd like to offer up maybe our high schools around the state might be a good resource. The kids who are graduating, and most of them, I think, have to do a senior project. And I can see them fitting into your program very nicely in some cases.
Okay. Good idea.
We'd certainly appreciate all of you coming today and sharing the information with us. And we'll continue to try to help share it. Just briefly to tomorrow's schedule, do you happen to have it off the top of your head, or should we?
9 a.m., room 50. 11 o'clock. Upstairs, where at, Paul?
He's not in the room right now.
He snuck out. I embarrassed him.
Outside Senate the Senate chamber at 11. Okay.
11.
That's the bill signing. 9 a.m. is the welcome and the get-together down in room 50.
And I will still remind the committee that we are in session at 11 o'clock. I have excused myself to attend the bill signing, but if you aren't pre-excused, you're going to be in trouble if you go to that. Okay. Thank you very much for coming. And with that, we'll move to get a little more information, hopefully, on how we can be helpful. We have John Baker with us today, who has a project he would like to share with us. And whomever else he can talk into holding his hand up here, I guess. I'm sorry. Mr. Willis, did you have something you wanted to add in here while we're getting set up that I just walked over the top of you? And
I do.
I'll be in trouble here. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I brought a handout for you today that looks like this. This is the hard copy state benefits package that includes federal benefits. And this is a fairly new item. This CD that you have is what we call our welcome home package. This is used both in demobilization of Guard and Reserve troops, and it's also used with active duty military personnel from Oregon who are either finishing their enlistment and getting out, being discharged, or have done a full career and are retiring, and they also get this. Okay. Active duty forces, we send about 300 of these a month, so we got about 3,600 military personnel coming back to Oregon every year. And then, of course, we have all of our demobilizations. And previous to the creation of this CD, we were using this hard copy veterans benefit. And the reason I like this particular hard copy is because it does a side-by-side on what is the state benefit and what is the federal benefit. So whether it's a home loan, whether it's education, whatever, it's real easy to read. And here's the little secret that not too many people know. And Michelle captured it pretty good a moment ago when she talked about the family coordinator's role in the outreach. Here's what we found out. If you give these books to the spouses, they make sure that the service member shows up for their appointments. It's really a good deal. So we.
How long did it take you to figure that out?
Well, we found out it really works well. And I know it from just life experience.
Sorry. There you go.
In my own family, I can assure you. I just now what I want to touch on is the role of ODVA in demobilization. We've talked about when people go over to their mobilization, which we just did this last weekend. And so I'll hit the heavy or the important points here, and then we can go to John Baker and the love boxes. Every single one of our OEF-OAF deployed members is entitled to 5 years of free health care from the VA as soon as they come home. Every one of them entitled 5 years. So they don't have to wait in line. They can be enrolled, and they get VA health care for 5 years. Originally, it was 3 years. We determined, along with our federal partners, that that wasn't going to do, especially where you had long-term counseling and that kind of thing. So it's now 5 years. One of our responsibilities is to connect veterans with veteran service officers for benefit assessment and referral. We do that both with state service officers, with national service officers that work for VFW, American Legion, Purple Heart, and others, and, of course, with our county veteran service office program across the state. In terms of post-traumatic stress disorder, our job is to get the veteran to one of our vet centers or to a community-based outreach clinic for mental health and also to file claims on their behalf with regard to PTSD. The same is true of traumatic brain injury. We are seeing screening occurring through DOD when all of them come back out of theater. But it's still our responsibility to follow up with that and make sure that they're getting the treatment from our counseling centers and that the traumatic brain injury screening actually occurred. This committee has already heard a great deal about military sexual trauma. Same issue. We need to get these folks into vet centers for counseling, community-based outreach clinics for mental health, or other appropriate treatment. The screening with regard to what we call MST is occurring, but it's a self-declaration kind of thing, and we're finding that men and women who have been victims of military sexual trauma are reticent to speak of it, well, at least while they're still in uniform. So it's part of what our service officers do when we do assessments on these veterans. I've also shared with this committee in great detail our suicide awareness and prevention program, which is ongoing. Just last week, I was in Central Oregon where we're going to kick off a pilot program in Jefferson, Crook, and Deschutes County. This is strictly a pilot where we're going to match up trained military combat veterans with first responders who are dealing with what we're calling non-criminal suicide incidents, so that that combat veteran who is trained can speak to the veteran who is potentially suicidal, and we're hoping that we can save some lives through this new program. And then, of course, in the arena of employment, you just heard about the work the Guard is doing not only within their reintegration team, but also with the employer support to the Guard and Reserve, and the number of Oregon employers who have stepped up to create some jobs for these folks when they're going overseas. Also, you've heard from Jim Booker from the Employment Department, who's talked about Oregon's local veteran employment representatives and our Disabled Veteran Outreach Program. We are, as part of the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services, seeking strong support from the United States Congress to increase the funding for the DVOP and leavers, not only in our state, but across the nation. This is a time when we need those people doing what they do to reemploy these veterans. This committee has also heard about the steps we've taken to make sure that the post 9/11 GI Bill is a resounding success in our state. We just had a bill up earlier this morning on that exact issue. I'm happy to say that we have the support of the Oregon University system in the tuitions, and we now have a pretty strong figure from the federal government on what the annual amount of dollars per veteran is going to be in terms of availability for one school year. Looks like it's going to be $42,000. That's a pretty good amount of money. Now, that's not all tuition, as you know. Gosh, I hate to think it was tuition, but it's a stipend for living. It's books, it's lab fees, it's other equipment that they need in order to seek that education. That can also be used for vocational training, in addition to academic at both community college and upper-level university systems. The veteran service officers that work across our state conduct legal, medical, and military research in terms of records, to develop evidence to support the veterans' claims. I believe this committee is also well aware that Oregon ranks in the top 10 in both pension and compensation in the nation. We placed fourth and sixth, respectfully, in that area. I'm really proud of that effort, and that is primarily the work of the veteran service officers at the state, county, and national level that are making that happen. I think we can do better. I know they're going to try to do better. And the bottom line is that an informed, intelligent veteran and their family are easier for us to help. They're easier for the federal VA to make a good, positive decision on their claims. And so I think our demobilization work, along with the National Guard reintegration team, our employment department, the federal VA, and our other partners across the state, including the employer support to Guard and Reserve, have come a long way, as General Caldwell said, from the first summits that we held to where we are today. And I think you can take great pride in not only what we're doing, but the fact that we are not satisfied and we are continuing to work. And, of course, as these changes are made, Madam Chair, we will certainly let this committee know what they are.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That's it. Sure. Thank you.
Mr. Baker, I'm sorry to have interrupted your progress here. I never dare overlook my Director of Veterans Affairs. I apologize
right now,
for that.
For sure. I was actually unprepared. Thank you for
it. Well, there we go.
I'll just set up my props.
Well, it should be gone, and it should be going on indefinitely, just like federal bed.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Committee, my name's John Baker, and first thing I'd like to say, I'm sorry, Representative.
That's all right. I'm
and
sure.
He's hiding behind that box.
Yeah.
I thought it was a talking box up there.
Yes.
Exciting show we're putting on today.
Yes, I want to thank you very much for allowing me to be here as a guest. It's been a life-changing 3.5 years in my life since Lieutenant Colonel Bill Schutz of the Oregon National Guard volunteered to go to Iraq, and this was in April of 2005. And our daughters were best friends, and we attend the same church in South Salem. And I asked him in April of 2005, what can I do to support you? And this goes back, Madam Chair, to the question that you asked, what can we do as citizens, regular citizens that don't have any connection to the military, to make a difference? And he said, oh, I'll be fine. And 4 months passed, and I ran into his wife, and I again asked the question because I hadn't done a darn thing. And she said, go down to the post office and get a free domestic flat rate box. Here's his APO address. Fill it full of goodies and send it to him. So, and I was 50 years old at the time, and I had this box like this. It was empty, and I'm walking up and down the aisle of the grocery store trying to figure out amongst the tens of thousands of items what I'm going to put into this box to send over the soldier. And it finally struck me, I felt so ashamed, 50 years old, that I finally realized that without our military, none of these things on the shelves would be there. If we weren't protecting our borders, someone would take everything. And so I packed the box and sent it off to him, and I got such a wonderful response that I approached the pastors of our church. I said, can I get up in front of the church and with some boxes, and maybe they'll take some boxes and send it to the three soldiers that were from our own membership who were in Kuwait, Iraq, and Bahrain. And so in November of 2005, got up there and presented. I don't remember what I said, but the members took 600 boxes. There were the spouses in the audience were in tears. All the Vietnam veterans were demanding boxes because they didn't want to be treated, the present soldiers, the way they were treated. And there were men in the units when they learned that people that they didn't even know were sending them boxes were crying. And so that became a pretty clear message that this should be an effort that should continue. So that's when Operation Love Boxes for our troops was started. And you have packages in front of you and DVDs, and I'm going to play the DVD that was just made for us, and it's up at the website. So we've created a website that has all the information so that anybody can do this project anywhere in the state of Oregon. They can present it in schools, they can present it at businesses, they can present it at state agencies, Lions Clubs, etc. The DVD message that you're going to see here in a moment is on the website, so it can be played at any points, just 4 minutes long, and this is how all of us can do a little bit for these 2,600 plus Oregonians as they enter into their deployment beginning in the middle of July. So I'm going to play that for you right now.
Nice. Magic.
Receiving the love boxes from home is just an absolute reminder that we are getting support from the American people.
The first time we got them, we were shocked, first, that there was that many packages. And I told them, you know, I don't know what's in them. These are all for my mom. You know, let's open them up and see what it's all about. And then we see the Twinkies and the bubble gum.
It's amazing to think that so much joy can come from one little box. Operation Love Boxes isn't a company or an individual. It's an idea. Packaging up pieces of home to send to our soldiers overseas is a powerful and effective way to show them that we care, that they are not forgotten.
When you take somebody away from their home, away from their normal environment, the morale can quickly go down. Love Boxes was just a perfect tool for a leader to help raise those spirits up.
This is a credible way that the public can get involved and show their support for soldiers more than a sticker on the car or some pledge or some statement. It's a way that you can make a difference.
Sending a love box is so easy. Just pick up a free domestic flat rate box from your local post office. If you don't already have an address, simply log on to loveboxesforourtroops.com. to obtain the name and address of a soldier overseas. Now, fill the box. Cookies, CDs, gum. Be creative.
Some of the favorite things, they love Twinkies, popcorn, jerky, granola bars, things that can go into their pockets, say when they're on patrol, toothpaste, chapstick, sunscreen.
We would receive boxes from schools filled with magazines.
They love the Girl Scout cookies. It's not just a great snack, but it's the Girl Scouts. It's Americana, you know, and that was a real big hit.
After you've filled the box, simply drop it off at your local post office, and for a flat rate, your gift will brighten the life of a soldier overseas.
When you have people that don't necessarily have a direct tie to the military, sometimes they don't feel like they have a mission. They don't have a role. And I think that Love Box fills that gap. So if there's someone out there that has that ability to rally the troops, to really motivate, put it in perspective. What is an hour of your time compared to a year of another person's time?
When you do get something from home, it is a good reminder, and I think it's a good mental break to be able to go back and kind of think about, you know, why you are doing what you're doing.
It's not just a box of candy coming from these love boxes. It's a part of home, no matter where they are.
I saw these boxes coming in. I saw what they meant to the soldiers. To be able to share that with these other troopers and let them participate in that and let them know that it's more than just us over there. There's people back here that really do care about what we're doing.
This is one of those things where it's not copyrighted. If everybody across the nation started doing it, it would be even better.
Our website has taken a lot of these ideas and is there free for anybody to use as a way to support their own effort, and they can call it anything they want just as long as they do something.
Those serving in our military need to know that they are appreciated. As the citizens they are defending, the least we can do is send them a clear message telling them that they are.
Thank you.
That presentation is on the web, free for any of you to use. Madam Chair, I was thinking they could be called Boone's Boxes. I think that has a good rhyme to it. So
I did it for a friend who spent 3 years in Kuwait.
Yeah, I couldn't get it to work for any of the other names.
We'll let it be Boone's Boxes.
but how this works is, you can go and register at the Postal Service, and they can send you a case of these boxes to your address, and they send it to you for free. They can send you the declaration forms to your address, so you can set up for free. In your packet are just copies of the materials that we have, which is from the Oregon Military website, which shows the items that the soldiers like, how to fill out a declaration form, instructions that we made up, how much it costs. And so we make usually a presentation, and then they tell how many boxes that they want to take, and we give them a declaration form for each box, and they fill the box, and then they pay the $11.95 postage when they mail it. That way it spreads the burden out rather than soliciting funds in one central location. So there's many different ways that you can do it, but we've made the website available. There's no commercial. This is not for profit. This is supported by my company. You will not find my company's name anywhere on any of the materials. It would be wrong to take any credit for the sacrifice of our men and women in uniform. This is for love of country. And so this was presented at the Board of Directors at the Oregon Association of Realtors. They adopted this project. There's local boards all over the state that are now challenging themselves, getting ready to be packing boxes when these troops get deployed. And there's going to be, on May 21st, right here in the East Galleria, there's going to be a box packing party, of which you're all going to be invited. You're actually going to be solicited to support the cost of two boxes. And we're going to have 4 hours box packing. We're going to hope to pack 200 boxes, which will cover about the 146 Oregon National Guard that are presently deployed in Iraq. So we'll get enough for each one of those. If any extra, we'll go to the Combat Stress Clinic that's right across the way. That's soldiers that are having problems like the general had mentioned. And so I'd like, with your permission, I'd like to read one letter, a response. It was one of my favorite letters from August of 2006. And this is from Kenneth Nix. He was a veteran, but he was back in country as a civilian contracting officer. I don't know if anyone has ever told you what tremendous impact these boxes have on our troops over here. I have the pleasure of seeing the direct impact on the faces and the morale of these soldiers when they receive these boxes. No matter how many times they receive a box, they still can't believe that someone that they don't even know cares enough to send them not only necessities that are very hard to get over here, but all those other things such as candy and snacks. Most of the soldiers that get these boxes are not much more than kids in uniform, 19 to 21 years old, but they've seen and experienced so much. All of them can tell you stories of friends in their unit that have been killed or wounded, which is a heck of a thing for a youngster to experience, and yet the boxes seem to take away a bit of the sting from the tough experiences that they have to endure. I can tell you one particular story of a time about 2 months ago when the IED explosions were so bad on the access roads that the mail trucks could not bring any mail in for about 10 days. As usual, a private and two specialists came by our office to pick up the boxes, and there just weren't any boxes to be had. When I had to break the bad news to him, the private, who was all of 18 years old, looked like he was almost ready to cry. They really look forward to these boxes, and the individual combat units only rotate through here once a month or so. I felt so bad for that kid that I wanted to cry. As luck would have it, that same soldier was here on Wednesday this week, and as he walked in our office, the wall of boxes that had arrived on Monday made his face light up. He was truly excited. They loaded up and went outside. As soon as they were out the door, they sat down on the ground and opened the boxes and began to eat. They loaded their pockets. and then move to their vehicles and to go back to their buddies and their units. There's not much more to say other than a sincere thank you from the bottom of my heart. These boxes do as much for me as they do the troops because I have the joy to actually putting the boxes in their hands. I wish that you could experience that feeling because it is something that will radically change your perspective in your life. And then one of the unintended consequences came in this next sentence. The Iraqi employees that work in our office cannot believe the reason that you send these boxes is simply because you care about our boys in uniform, and the people that send these boxes don't even know the troops they are sending them to. They have a difficult time understanding this concept because under Saddam, the attitude has always been just survival with a me-first focus. My father told me when I was young that when you're truly mature is when the most important person in your life is someone else, not you. You and your organization have proven how true that statement is. Thank you so very much for your support of the troops over here, and I can assure you that what you're doing is making a huge difference in their lives. My warmest regards, Kenneth H. Nix, Senior Contracting Officer. Hard for me to not cry every time I read that letter. And the last thing, before opening up for questions, this is a letter, Madam Chair, that I received today from Iraq, and I wanted to, I've not opened it, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to open this letter and read what it has to say. I have no idea what it says, but it's from an officer from a unit that we sent boxes to this last month. Would you like to read it, Madam Chair?
I'll try.
Yeah.
So help me, you don't need the name of an individual soldier then, you just
Madam Chair,
send this to a sort of a central location? Or
Madam Chair, actually for security reasons you do need a name of a soldier, and we should feel very blessed. The Oregon Military Department actually at their website publishes contact people for each one of the units. So right now when you go to the Oregon Military Department, there's two names up there that understand that when they receive a box that they'll distribute it to the members of their unit. And so when these other units get there, it'll be a full page of names. The reason why they don't do it to a central location is because we have enemies that would send boxes that could be tainted or whatever. So that's why the addresses which you saw in your package actually came from all over the United States, because this website has helped spur box packing. So we have people that email us and say, will you put my son or my daughter and send them boxes, and or a sergeant major, any soldier that asks, we will automatically, for their initiative, we will send boxes to that unit.
Okay, so this is an example of what you might see
That's those addresses that you have in your packet are what's up on our website today. We'll be removing a few of them because we know they're about ready to redeploy or to come back. Okay. So we don't like to have the boxes bounce back if at all possible.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to read this letter. It's dated 27 April 2009. Mr. Baker, by way of introduction, my name is Chief Warrant Officer 4, Robert Hall, U.S. Marine Corps. I'm attached to the Multinational Force W Command Element at Al-Asad Air Base, Iraq. Over the past couple of months, I've been the benefactor of the treats you and your organization have been sending to one of the personnel attached to my specific office, Lieutenant Commander Joshua Nauman. I just wanted to personally thank you and the folks that participate in this program. Your efforts are very much appreciated by all of us in the office. Could you please pass my regards to the rest of your organization for sending out these wonderful care packages? I am truly honored and feel very lucky that we have folks like you and the organization you represent thinking about us over here. Always faithful, Robert Hall.
Yes, Semper Fidelis.
Yes.
Those are the types of things, the most important thing you can put in the box beyond the goodies is the encouraging note and your contact information. And I hope all of you do that so that you can be recipients like that letter. I have boxes full of them, and for the last 3.5 years, I have not had a bad day, because once you appreciate the sacrifice of our military, there is nothing that can happen in this life that meets up with their sacrifices, and so you do not have an excuse as an American citizen who benefits from their sacrifice to have that bad day. So God bless our military. Thanks to our veterans in my rear and the spouses. So thank you so much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chair.
Representative Esquivel.
It's not a question. It's just a challenge to my fellow legislators here. We have passed out support the troops by packing a love box and paying the $11.95, and I will commit to at least 2 of those boxes, and I challenge my fellow legislators to do the same and follow suit.
Thank you, Representative. I suspect that you can expect all of us to be helping you pack boxes if our schedule by any means allows us to do that on May 21st between 1 and 5.
Yeah.
I might talk to the leadership to make sure we can be available.
Well, we'll be there, too, to answer questions so that you can... What I hope is you take this idea back to your districts after Sine Die to help out these 2,600. So thank you so much.
Do we have to wait that long?
No, you can send a box tomorrow.
I'm pretty sure there's a box there that will receive.
But I figured you're
kind of
busy right now, Representative.
I have weekends.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank Representative you. Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's funny you gave the chair that letter because Josh Nauman actually went to school with one of my sons, I believe. So he's from Yamhill County, if it's the same one.
Interesting.
So,
yes.
It was that one hit home. You probably didn't even expect that. So,
the Lord moves in wonderful ways, Representative, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you very much for bringing your program and sharing it with us. Are there any other specific questions for Mr. Baker? All right. If not, I guess you'll see us, if at all possible, on the 21st.
Love to see you. Thank you very much for having me.
And I will return your letter to you here. Committee, any other business before the committee today? No? Thank you, and we stand adjourned.
You can leave now.
Thank you, Representative.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I know.